Jeff.
AM950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein is our national and presidential expert, a noted author. Find his books over at Next Chapter Books, totallyiowa.com. The Iowa Business Report is his daily show he does down there. And, of course, the Iowa Politics Report comes from KXEL, Cedar Falls, Waterloo, as Jeff has. You've been doing marathon radio today, correct?
I am so done with hearing the sound of my own voice.
Join the crowd. Sorry.
It's not good on a good day. But then you just add, you know, doing more and more, and now I'm going to do 3 hours a day at my home station. Nobody needs this. I don't think anyway. Apparently I wasn't working hard enough. I don't know.
Hey, what do you think about midnight to two? You know, I've had that conversation too. What I think about it is I'm sleeping, so you better not ask me to do that shift.
Well, you know, sleep is a bit overrated. Yeah, one of the great fallacies in radio, just for you folks at home, because I don't know, what did the rule used to be? 2 to 3 hours of time off air for every hour you spend on air doing a talk show. I mean, it's basically you hear somebody on the air for 2 hours a day and you think, well, that's an easy job. Well, it's a full-time job if you're doing it right to prepare. So, but of course, radio station management says what? Well, it's just another hour.
Well, I mean, if you're a regular listener to this dumpster fire, you know, you may say to yourself, oh, yeah, they're just pulling this one right out of Matt's caboose today. No, actually, he's right. It is kind of one of those things that takes a long time. So 5 hours. So basically, you haven't been to sleep. You've been just prepping shows the last 24 hours.
No, I've just been faking it.
Well, yeah. Welcome to the Matt McNeil Show. There you go.
You're an influencer. That's what you are. You're an influencer.
Well, you're going to be influenced too, because I did, after our little comments the last few weeks ago, I did get you a Piggly Wiggly shirt. You shall be having that down in beautiful Iowa. You can wear to your heart's content.
I will not only, if you actually send that, which I believe you will, but I will take a photo of me wearing it behind the microphone so that you can, so there will be hostage video proof. I'll hold a newspaper up with the current date.
Beautiful. All right.
Did you see this, by the way, on social media? There were those on the right complaining that Joe Biden was hiding out. I don't know how you're hiding out when you're making regular statements and you're at Camp David. But in any case, one of them said, I'm not going to believe it because of this stuff about photos and clocks and everything. They said, I'm not going to believe that it's really Joe Biden unless I see him holding up a newspaper. Unfortunately, that day's newspaper headline was, Afghanistan falls to Taliban. So I'm guessing nobody was going to show Joe that newspaper.
You and I don't touch on the world news so much. I mean, it's interesting. What we've heard from the intelligence agencies is there definitely were some signs that, and I think the best way to say it is this, that the Afghan military and the Afghan government that we had installed was not reliable enough that when the Taliban started getting going, that they were going to just sweep across as they did. There were some counterpoints to that were being put out there. Your thoughts on the fact that, I mean, we're 20 years, I mean, and I'll get to this in a second. This is not one president. This is four presidents, 20 years,
right.
And quite literally, this was, you know, it's almost like we just, you know, we've tried to stop a semi-truck with a Band-Aid. It just, nothing happened there. It really is disappointing. Your thoughts a little bit just on the Taliban's re-rise to power in Afghanistan.
Well, again, as you note, this is something that this country tried to manage for two decades. We pointed and laughed at the Soviets, the Russians, depending on which era, when they were trying to take care of things in Afghanistan. Obviously, we had no better luck. The thing that I think of this week in particular is whether we should have ever been there or not is not the discussion for today. Whether we should have pulled out sooner is not the discussion for today. In essence, Matt, today's discussion is how we executed this policy. And my concern is, did we have such bad intel that the administration made what looks like to be a very poor decision in terms of the speed and being caught by surprise? Was the intel so bad, or were they so concerned about ripping the Band-Aid off, getting out as soon as possible, being done by 9/11, that they ignored the signs. If that's my choice, and I'm willing to believe there are more choices, but just assume for this moment those are the choices, I would much rather that it be good intel was ignored, because you as a veteran can attest to the fact that bad decisions made by politicians, that's one thing. Bad intel is a much worse long-term problem. And that is what I'm just really wondering. Where are we at on this? Were we just so focused on what we wanted for an outcome, we didn't pay attention to signs? Or did we not have good intel? Because, again, that spins across the globe.
Conflicting intel, for sure. And conflicting intel from good sources, so that was also a problem. I'm gonna put one thing out here, and this is what I truly do believe. Trump did his order to withdraw really didn't give whoever was going to be the next president any wiggle room to get out of it. As a matter of fact, even in July, this July, Trump was out there bragging about how Biden wanted to stop and he couldn't. I actually think the complete opposite. I don't think Biden wanted us to be there. I think he might have gone along with us under the W administration. But frankly, everything I'm seeing from Joe Biden's response and reaction to this is the feeling is we should have never been there, or we should not have been there this long. And he is 100% for getting out. This is 20 years. And just, you know, he clearly himself as the president, and he is entitled to have this feeling. I just don't think he's vocalized it well. He just clearly doesn't want to be there. And he's okay with the fact that Trump kind of set this up. He'll go along with it. The reality is that at the end of the day, I would make an argument that considering what the United States, the money and the people and the manpower and the lives lost that we put into Afghanistan, if the Afghanis are not, you know, willing to fight for it, well, then why are we there again? And I think that that's a good argument. And that kind of, Biden is a pretty good foreign policy guy. I just don't think he wants to be there.
No, I completely agree that he has never wanted to be there. And in fact, there's some reporting now that suggests, and I think, I'm a little blurry-eyed now, I think it was in The Atlantic, and it may have been Holbrooke's diary, where there was discussion during the Obama years about getting out of Afghanistan. And Holbrooke raised the issue about, well, what about our assets there? What about the women and girls that have been liberated if we just simply leave? And Biden's comment, as this reporting goes, was, hey, doesn't matter. He was a little earthier, family show here. He said, doesn't matter. Nixon and Kissinger pulled out of Saigon. They got away with it. It will be fine. Now, I'm not trusting somebody's diary when that person was opposed to the person being quoted. All right.
Yes.
Because remember, but I would suggest this is right along with what you said. Consistently, Biden did not want to be there. He gets to be president. He gets to decide we're getting out. And by gosh, we're getting out sooner. I'm going to one up Trump. We're going to get out of here sooner. And again, that's fine. I'm concerned about the execution where we apparently were caught by surprise with the speed of it. And I think, and I did not hear the entire briefing today, the Secretary of Defense and the Joint Chiefs, they met with the president at the White House today, then they had a briefing. And I believe they were saying we were, I'm not going to use the correct verbiage. This is not a direct quote. We were caught off guard by the speed of which this all happened.
Yeah, Jake Sullivan was talking about that. Yeah, I remember that.
Well, now that was Sullivan yesterday, but today, this afternoon, it was General Milley and Secretary Austin. And they said the same thing, you know, that we were caught off guard by the speed of this. And I think that regardless of who's in the White House, it just shows that we in the Western world, lack of a better phrase, we don't understand a lot of the other world. We try to impute our values there. And so we don't understand how it is for people to pick up a paycheck and switch sides to fight or to switch to the other team just because it looks like they're winning. We don't sense that, but that's how they live. And I'm not being critical of how they live. I'm saying we're trying to formulate global policy and we're trying to impute our thought process, for lack of a better phrase, on people who have a very different one. Well, of course, you're going to have horrible policy, therefore.
Well, and if I can put in something else too, I mean, when you're looking at intelligence that you're supposed to have on the ground, part of that is you need to have run intelligence on your allies too. And how reliable are they? Because if all of a sudden they just throw down their weapons and say, we're with you guys, well, what do we do? It's interesting because of all the four presidents that have been in office during Afghanistan, Biden, in my mind, has the least culpability. I think we can clearly criticize W. I mean, they had the Taliban on the ropes. You had bin Laden in Tora Bora, and they pulled everything out to go attack Iraq, who did not attack us during 9/11. Obama, the problem I have with President Obama is he tried to turn that into some kind of nouveau Peace Corps thing, that he was going to be like, we're going to go in there and we're going to bring in American rights, American values. We're going to do this. We're going to give them, we're going to teach them, better things. And of course, reminder too, in Obama's term, he might have been trying to get out of that. But then when they found all those minerals in the mountains of Afghanistan, and the people wanted the minerals, all of a sudden that stopped that process dead in its tracks, regardless of whether that was Democrat or Republican. And so you have that. And I think he was misguided. Obama was very misguided in trying to create some sort of different country that just was not going to be there while the Taliban was starting to come back. Trump, I mean, let's not forget, he was welcoming the fact that he left the U.S. installed government out of negotiations, tried to welcome the Taliban to Camp David on 9/11 of all days. We got to remember that. And then after he negotiated terms with Taliban, which gave them immediate validity, went back, told the Afghani government we put into place, you need to release all their prisoners, which they did. He strong-armed them into doing that, which all those people are now these troops that are taking over the cities. I mean, there was horrible mismanagement, misguided policies from the get-go on this. Biden, and once again, it should be mentioned, this was Trump's decision, and there were a lot of stipulations that they really could not stay. Biden just going along with it is the least egregious of the violations of all the last four presidents, if you ask me.
In that one little part, it's only been 7 months. The die was cast with an agreement, and he made some tweaks to it and moved forward. Sure. I just don't understand how it is that so much military hardware was left behind.
Yeah.
In other words, if you've got an evacuation strategy, to me, the best case scenario with this wonderful hardware that we've left behind is that the Taliban uses it. It's worse if they then decide to sell it to the Russians or the Chinese, either of which is possible, because there's all sorts of proprietary information war stuff.
It goes back to my point there, is that the intelligence failure here is the fact that we trusted the established Afghan military, and we shouldn't. There should have been some intelligence saying, we can't really trust them. Make sure U.S. forces are deployed with them throughout the country. There's that failure, because you're exactly right. They have brand new jets. They've got brand new trucks. They got brand new stuff that was basically just, here you go. Here are the keys. What are we doing here? What are we doing?
Well, and it's something that's really interesting, too, and this is just now being leaked by ABC News. George Stephanopoulos had a sit-down with President Biden. Have you seen any of the clips from this?
Not yet.
I think it was conducted this afternoon and is going to show up on the TV box later today. Apparently the president is doubling down and saying this was going to be bad no matter what. Here's his direct quote that I'm seeing. The idea that somehow there's a way to have gotten out without chaos ensuing, I don't know how that happens. And then Stephanopoulos pushes a little bit, and he said, in essence, next question. What do you want me to do? This it was a bad situation. So I get a sense that if there was a bit of a blind spot, it was Biden saying, we got to get out. But the horrendous nature of this failure on the ground.
I mean,
let me finish. I'm not blaming him. I'm saying it's broader than that.
Yes.
Okay, that's my point. That was what I'm saying. Biden may have had a little bit of focus, shall we say, or a blind spot. But what's happening on the ground is more than just that, okay? More than just that. Mm-hmm. I don't know where all these breakdowns came. So what I'm saying is you can't just blame him unless we learn that all of these generals said, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. And that's clearly not happened, hasn't it?
My biggest problem with Biden is you should have had a plan in place to get all the people that helped us out of that country. Because I am actually pretty mad at Biden for that, because, you know, the interpreters, the families, you need to get those people out of there. And I don't know why he has been, his entire, since he's been in office, he has had a fairly conservative immigration policy. And it seems that that's kind of the holdup here. It's like, well, do we just bring all these people? Yes, you do. Because they're going to get killed if you leave them behind. That being said,
this is fair.
Go ahead.
Well, no, I agree with you, and this way we're not very far apart on this. And but this is the thing that bothers me about what I've seen from the right. All of this talk of why are you bringing those people here? What about the Americans? I think, and this may be a nuanced answer. I think the idea of the administration is there's no leverage left once all the Americans are out. So if you can now, when it's still a pretty active situation, get some of the interpreters, their families, our assets on the ground out of there, then we still can get the Americans out. I think that's what they're doing. And so all of these folks who are screaming, why are there no Americans? Why are we bringing out all these Afghans? It's because there's, first of all, a moral obligation to do it. And I think they can still leverage, whether it's payment, whether it's a deadline of August 31st, whatever. I think there's too much reactionary comment when I see that. It's like, well, why are there all these Afghans on here? We owe them.
Well,
and we can still get the Americans out.
We'll take a break. One final thing I'll say just really quick. When the whatever reporter that was from, I think it was Newsmax, came on out and said, isn't the U.S. willing to sacrifice more? And Jake Sullivan looked and said, 2,448 soldiers. That's a pretty damn big sacrifice. That's reality is this. We have sacrificed there on, with obviously blood and money. If the Afghans, in a lot of regions, they didn't want to defend their country. I mean, at what point is it our job to be there to try to help them if they don't want the help? And that's a big problem that, I think it's definitely a sign that the world doesn't look at the United States like it used to in the past. That's for sure. Let's take a break. We got to come on back. I want to talk a little bit about the COVID numbers exploding in the South in the schools. Jeff Stein joining us talking national politics. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us talking national politics. So, Jeff, I'm down in the South, and the numbers, and you and I predicted this, when school got back in session, this was going to be the nightmare always. The numbers of COVID cases within these kids is exploding. What was it? The 5,000 kids in one Florida district. I talked with a security guard at a museum in Savannah where their school district had 500 kids in the first 2 days. The interesting element was talking to conservatives, they're trusting a lot of these Republicans that are in charge. But there comes a point where, but my kid's going to be safe, right? And unfortunately and tragically, you are seeing not only kids going to the hospital, but kids are dying of this. And this is becoming a bigger mess. You and I did talk about this. This was always the trap these guys were painting themselves into. If you're going to go out there and say no face mask or no vaccine mandates, you're going to do this and you're going to encourage people to go back into a school environment, this was always going to become a mess.
Well, here's the thing. Anytime a school year starts, kids get together, they exchange germs.
Yes.
We know this, right? I don't have kids, and I know this. I can tell when I have coworkers, and they start sniffing around. It's like, oh, crap, we're back in school, aren't we? And so I try to stay away from them. So when we know that these classrooms, and I'm including college, as a college professor, I saw it all the time, obviously, they're little Petri dishes, each one of these classrooms. That's in a good situation, all right? And now you bring in a global pandemic, it means you've got to take care. And I think the question is, does it have to be through mandates or does it have to be through responsibility? And why does one size have to fit all?
Well,
I'm living in a state with a law that says no municipality may issue a mandate. That's suggesting that the metro areas of Des Moines are identical to the rural areas near Fayette. And they're not.
And there is a level of accountability to those regional districts. They can get voted out of office on a local municipal level. But it's this idea that, no, you have to do what I tell you, which, by the way, let's bring up Governor Abbott. That's, you know, if you're going to be out there as the face of we're standing strong against COVID to then find out you have COVID and then have found out, dear God, the photos of the guy from the day before when he's out meeting with all the Republicans, that's not going to go well.
Well, and he was fully vaccinated, and he's high risk, right? I mean, yeah. Because of his physical condition, he's high risk. So this is really tough because you get the vaccine. No vaccine is 100%. Do we have a variant that kind of, gets around the goalie, if you will, on this and is making things somewhat worse? Well, sure, we do. I'm just really waiting. I literally just got an email a little bit ago from a doctor who is not a big proponent of masks, first of all. He's a big proponent of the vaccine. He got COVID. He shared this on the air, so it's not a secret. He got COVID. He also got the vaccine. And what he's saying is we need to have not one size fits all, with vaccine as the number one choice.
But I will say this. All these outbreaks are happening in states where personal responsibility is the only option out there, and that doesn't seem to be working either. Jeff Stein, once again, I'll get the Iowa Politics Report out a little bit later on. Thanks, Jeff. We'll talk to you next week. Hour 2 up next.